LibertyNation.com does not endorse candidates, campaigns, or legislation, and this presentation is no endorsement.
Republicans raise the flag, Democrats get hammered, but almost everyone buries the lead from this week's GOP convention. We'll explain on this week's edition of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising. With Scott Cosenza.
I felt this burrowing up my leg.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
A president! Can you believe it?
This is somebody who knows what's right and what's wrong.
You know what podcasts are, by the way?
Talk shows for people who cannot make it in talk radio.
I just want to say to the men of this country, just shut up, do the right thing. For a change.
I think possibly that's the most unattractive form in which prejudice can be met in this country, is the rage of the entitled.
This is The Uprising, a podcast of LibertyNation.com, and we welcome you in. Scott, you may have noticed, is away. Scott Cosenza on vacation, a well-earned one, at least I'll say that for public attribution. So he's away and the mice can play. This is Tim Donner sitting in for Scott this week, and you know me as a frequent contributor most weeks to The Uprising. And today we're going to talk about the GOP convention, the Democrat convention, in perspective now that both of them are over. And you know what? We are just days away from the real start of the, I guess, two-month-long presidential campaign. It generally starts, you know, right after Labor Day. Although, of course, the parties have been posturing for a long time. And you may have heard me say in the opening that almost everyone buried the lead from this week's GOP convention. And you might be saying, how could every media outlet in the world covering this GOP convention from stem to stern, every speaker, every message, every attack, every defense of the president's record, all of that, how could everybody from Fox News to MSNBC bury the lead? How could they miss it? Well, maybe because people didn't really absorb the magnitude of what was said. And it was by Vice President Mike Pence. Now, it's Thursday noon when we're recording this. A Trump speech hasn't happened yet, just for perspective. But Mike Pence did something on Wednesday night, on the third night of the convention, that brought to mind the 1972 campaign and another president running for re-election and another president who wasn't very popular. But in his case, he was headed for a landslide, but he didn't want to take any chances. Richard Nixon was days away from absolutely pummeling George McGovern, the most radical candidate who'd ever run for president to that time, and Nixon wound up winning 49 out of 50 states, even though he wasn't that popular. But here's what he did to assure his reelection. He sent out his Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, just a matter of days, less than a week before the 1972 election. And what did Kissinger say? In the midst of the Vietnam War, which had caused a conflagration in this country, which if you weren't alive for it, folks, it was similar to what we're seeing now. That level of violence, that kind of uprising, that kind of insurrection against the American government, the decision to send troops to Vietnam and to keep them there. The war was extremely unpopular, but what did Henry Kissinger say just days before the election about this wildly unpopular war? He said, peace is at hand. Peace is at hand. Now, I'm sure those on the left didn't believe him. Those on the right hoped it was true, and those in the middle were left to either believe or not believe what Kissinger said. Well, apparently they did believe him because Nixon went on to win 49 states, but That takes us to day three of the Republican convention. And Mike Pence, getting up before the assembled group of Trump supporters and saying this.
I'm proud to report that we're on track to have the world's first safe, effective coronavirus vaccine by the end of this year.
I mean, that's huge. That's huge. If people believe that a vaccine is at hand, to use sort of paraphrase the words of Henry Kissinger in 1972, if they believe, if the people believe, if the voters believe that a vaccine is at hand, doesn't that pretty much guarantee Trump's reelection? Because it's his response to the COVID, whether fair or not, is viewed not that favorably. Maybe 40% of people approve of the way he's handled the COVID, and the rest not so much. But if he can promise a vaccine, the question then only becomes whether people believe him or not. Now, it may also be a case where Trump, Pence are under-promising and plan to over-deliver. What I mean is they may be able to actually confirm the release of a vaccine. There's two of them in phase three trials right now. Seven are being worked on, by my understanding. Two of them are very close. So it could be that would be the ultimate October surprise in this year of pain and hardship and suffering and depression and despair. What if he can announce sometime in October that approval is done, the trials are over, and a vaccine is ready to be unleashed on the American people? That would probably negate the biggest negative that Trump has. Right now, his biggest negative is not his personality. It's the same as 2016, when, of course, he pulled off the greatest political upset in history. He's the same guy now. I mean, any scandals, calling him racist, that sort of stuff, that didn't work the first time. Probably wouldn't the second time. Definitely wouldn't have if the COVID hadn't come around, because, you know, Trump was looked like he was on a glide path to re-election. I mean, after all, look at the economy. Look at the jobs numbers. He most likely would have easily won re-election. Then comes COVID. Then comes the violence in the streets. And, of course, they dealt with that as well. But the vaccine is the magic bullet for the Trump campaign. If he can pull it off, if a vaccine can actually be developed, safe and available, I don't think there's any question Trump wins the election. Without that, who knows? Numbers don't look so promising for him, do they? However, it's closing. It's closing, especially in the battleground states, but the real campaign doesn't really begin till September. And the events that will probably shape the final outcome of the election have yet to happen. They'll happen in September, October. The COVID will get worse. The COVID will get better. Maybe we get a vaccine. Maybe other treatments are available that can, you know, remediate the effects of the virus. But let's expand a little bit and talk about the GOP convention in perspective, together with the Democrats a week before, because we have a pretty good idea now how both parties are trying to present themselves to the American people, don't we? The Democrats, largely a convention of grievance. Grievance on parade. Grievance against racism, against poverty, but mostly against Donald Trump. Grievance against Trump from end to end. Basically, they're putting all their eggs in the basket of people hate Trump so much for whatever reason that they'll just boot him out of office, because obviously Joe Biden doesn't present by himself an attractive alternative. He represents an alternative for those people who are looking for any alternative, anybody with a pulse. And Joe Biden satisfies those people. The question is, how many of those roughly 20% in the middle, how many of them are going to be persuaded one way or another? So, again, Mike Pence, and the reason I'm using him is because, well, you know, vice presidents and vice presidential candidates are generally used as attack dogs. They're used to make the most savage attacks on the opposing candidate. And Mike Pence was no different. He's sort of a tower of strength and stability. And he gives you a sense of you know, being sort of the yin to Trump's yang, or is it yang to yin, whatever you want to call it. I mean, he's a figure of stability, very upright and strong and resolute. So when Mike Pence says something, it has a different effect than when Trump does. Because, of course, Trump talks so much that his words have less and less impact over time, whereas Pence is a lot more deliberate, more of a traditional politician. And so when Mike Pence said this, this was the other major line of attack, because it's not like the Republicans only presented Trump's record. They did, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but they came back with a full-on attack on the Democrats as a party that will drag the country into socialism, as a party, a dark and dreary America, full of despair and hopelessness and joblessness and racism and violent cops who hate people simply because of the color of their skin. And so the Republicans had to answer to this grievance on parade that we'd seen the week before when they mentioned the violence that's overtaken more than 24 cities across the country. They didn't even mention it. Not one word. Oh, but the Republicans did. You bet. And I think that Joe Biden's America, the way the Republicans tried to depict it, was perfectly stated by Mike Pence.
President Trump and I will always support the right of Americans to peaceful protest. But rioting and looting is not peaceful protest. Tearing down statues is not free speech. And those who do so will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Joe Biden would be nothing more than a Trojan horse for the radical left. The hard truth is, you won't be safe in Joe Biden's America.
Those are fighting words. Those are fighting words. You will not be safe in Joe Biden's America. So what they're trying to do is appeal the same way that the Democrats tried to appeal, in a different way, but to the same group. Those pesky white suburban women who polls have shown for decades are most concerned about safety and security. That's what they like. That's foremost on their list of priorities, unless things have dramatically changed suddenly in the last, what, four years. And they want low taxes, but they also want to be able to signal their virtue by voting for candidates of color, which is why they're so excited about Kamala Harris, we're told. I don't see it, but we're told that that's true. So what Mike Pence and the Republicans are coming back with is that all that rioting, the looting, the insurrection, which means basically trying to overthrow the government or authorities of the government, that's coming to your neighborhood, white suburban women. You think it's limited to the cities? Think again. We've got an increasing number of examples of suburban families who've been terrorized by mobs of people who threatened and intimidated them. They call them peaceful protests in the Democratic Party. The Republicans don't. I don't think ordinary people do. When you riot and burn down businesses that people have built, sometimes over decades. That is not a legitimate protest. The Republicans, of course, made that point. But they tried to scare you big time about what Joe Biden's America would be like. What could you say more than Joe Biden, or you will not be safe in Joe Biden's America? Direct appeal to those suburban housewives to say, you know, before you go virtue signal and talk all about how much you love Kamala Harris, think about what could be coming to your community next if the Democrats take charge and continue to demonstrate an unwillingness to suppress mob violence, to do the minimum. Democrat mayors in every one of these cities have refused to do their most basic duty, which is to keep their people safe. That's the first thing you are pledged to do as an elected official, the person in charge of a town or a state. So they just hammered the Democrats from end to end. But of course, they're also selling the Trump record. And what might have been an easy sell for them 6 months ago, before the COVID, and before the violence, before the insurrection, is now a little bit of a harder case to make, isn't it? Because you have to say, look what he did up until. But then Mike Pence says, and I think this is probably a pretty good slogan if they want to recycle it, so to speak, make America great again, again. Make America great again, again. Say, he did it once, he can do it again. What has Joe Biden ever done in his 47 years in Washington? That's a sort of the basic message. But when they come hard to the microphone, or when they did at the convention, they were selling an awful lot of things that Trump has done, whether you like him or not. They're selling that he kept his promises. So I look for all the various threads of his record, Trump's record over these last 3.5 years. And I think the person that put it together the best in the shortest amount of time, which is why I picked it, was his son, Eric Trump, during the second night of the convention.
Taxes were slashed, regulations were cut, and the economy soared to new heights. Wages went through the roof. Unemployment reached historic lows, especially for Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, and women. Lights were turned back on in abandoned factories across our country. Trillions of dollars were repatriated back to the United States, which had been sitting in foreign lands for far too long. Over and over, issue after issue, the economy, the wall, the military, trade deals, tax cuts, Supreme Court justices, VA hospitals, prescription drugs, school choice, right to try, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, peace in the Middle East. Never-ending wars were finally ended. Promises made, and promises for the first time were kept.
So that's the other prong of the Republicans' message. Democrats bad, Trump outstanding. Which is, you know, the basic message of any convention. But there's a lot of things tangible that he's done that he can point to. Big difference between being the bombastic billionaire of 4 years ago that was promising the world and trying to figure out what, if any, part of it he could deliver. And now looking at 3.5 years, and you can see exactly what he's done and what he hasn't done. Whether you like it or not, it's very, very clear who he is. Which is why one of the pieces I wrote for LibertyNation.com, the sponsor of the uprising, and I'm the Washington political columnist for LibertyNation.com, one of the things I wrote was, who's the greater risk, Biden or Trump? Because 4 years ago, whether you liked Hillary Clinton or not, she was not risky in the sense that you knew pretty much exactly what she was going to be. Donald Trump? I mean, here he comes storming out of the gate, promising to shake everything up, to take down political establishments, to take down two dynasties. He had to take down Bush, and then he'd have to take down Clinton. He was going to overturn an encrusted establishment that have been building like this for decades on end. So talk about risky. Donald Trump in 2016. But fast forward to 2020, this year, this year like no other. And who's the riskier choice? The irony is that with Trump, you now know exactly what you're going to get in a second term. You're going to get a continued emphasis on economic growth, creating jobs, deregulating, building the wall, maintaining law and order, and a whole bunch of other things, but you know what you're going to get. But Joe Biden, the irony is, here's a guy who's been, as I like to say, hiding in plain sight in Washington for almost five decades. 47 years, and do you have any idea what he would actually do if he got into the Oval Office? I mean, you say, okay, you know, Biden has a track record of, by Democratic standards, being fairly moderate, sort of a conventional liberal. You pretty much knew exactly where he was going to stand on every single issue because it was sort of the conventional liberal position. You know, but now he's embracing, after being, after having a captive heart to the Washington establishment for almost five decades, he's now a captive, his heart is captive to the far left. They're controlling his every move. They're either allowing or not allowing him to basically say whatever they want. Why else would he have said nothing, not one thing to condemn this uprising in the streets, these criminals on the loose, destroying people and businesses, communities, over 30 people murdered in all of this? Why else would he not mention it? Because he wasn't permitted to by the progressive base, the far left base of his party. They didn't let him do it. Finally, they did this week. When things got so bad in Kenosha after the latest white cop, black victim shooting, it finally got so bad that I guess that Joe Biden was given permission to condemn it after 4 days at the Democratic convention where he never mentioned it, nor did anybody else. Didn't even mention it as if it wasn't happening. And why not? You watch CNN, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS, New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, the usual suspects. They're not talking about that. They mention it in passing. They call them peaceful protests or just protests. They won't use rioters. They won't use looters. They won't use criminals. They'll call them protesters. And they won't show this stuff in almost all of the mainstream media. All the aforementioned, they won't show it. You go to Fox News, you'll see it. But that's a very small audience compared to the 325 million people in this country. So how many people are actually aware that cities across the land are literally being burned to the ground? Whole sections of these cities are being burned to the ground. I'm not sure I'm aware of how many people really know that. Because this is one of the most major stories. This is an uprising like none we've seen since the 1960s. And yet, if you watch CNN, MSNBC, and the rest, it's as if it isn't happening. There's just continuing peaceful protests, Black Lives Matter, people protesting against racial injustice and police shootings. That's what it's presented as. So you wonder how many people are even aware of it. Though I suspect by the time Donald Trump is finished with this campaign, they will be well aware of it. The question is, among others, will those white suburban women who want a virtue signal by voting against Trump, will enough of them be drawn back to vote for Trump when their safety and security, or they perceive that their safety and security is actually threatened? So there was a lot of, you know, a lot of appeal to specific constituencies, of course, at the Republican convention, like there always is. And two of the constituencies that Trump targeted the most, you'd have to say, he tried to shore up his conservative base, his Christian base, all of that, yes. But the people that he's reaching for were the aforementioned women and black voters. I'll tell you, folks, Trump is absolutely intent on increasing his percentage in the black vote. He is intent. He has spent more time than any other Republican presidential candidate going after the black vote and talking about what he's done for the black people of this country and talking about how the Democrats have failed them. I mean, you get guys like Romney and McCain and even Bush and back to Bob Dole and George H.W. Bush and Reagan. None of those Republican presidential candidates or presidents made anything near the effort that Trump is making to win black votes. And one of the guys they rolled out to make the case is a rising star, rising black star in the Republican Party, named Daniel Cameron.
I think often about my ancestors who struggled for freedom. And as I think of those giants and their broad shoulders, I also think about Joe Biden, who says, if you aren't voting for me, you ain't black, who argued that Republicans would put us back in chains, who says there is no diversity of thought in the black community. Mr. Vice President, look at me. I am black. We are not all the same, sir. I am not in chains. My mind is my own. And you can't tell me how to vote because of the color of my skin.
You know, I got to tell you, I feel in my bones with an almost, with a certainty that I rarely have looking at an election, that this election will represent a real reckoning for black voters, a reckoning. Now, on the surface, you'd say, well, of course it is because of all the police violence and George Floyd and what happened in Kenosha and Breonna Taylor and all the rest. Yeah, that's part of it, to be sure. But also a light has been shining on the Democrats running the cities that black people have helped elect for decades on end. And they're seeing right before their eyes and in the media, to the extent that they're willing to cover it, these cities run by Democrats ablaze with the Democrats in charge doing nothing to stop it. Not even giving lip service to the idea that all this stuff is outrageous. Not even lip service. So Trump is saying, you know, look at, I mean, remember what he said 4 years ago to the black community? He said, what have you got to lose? Okay. What have you got to lose? Well, I guess the message this time is that if you vote for him and vote for Republicans, or at least don't vote for Democrats, which of course is the real goal. Trump wants to win a lot of black votes, but he'd settle for keeping a lot of them home and refusing to vote for the Democrat, even if it was a bridge too far to actually pull the lever for Trump. But you can see, you could see through the convention the way it was sprinkled with people of color. And by the way, most of the black people who got up there to support Trump were outgoing Christians. Don't know if you noticed that, but almost all of them, if not all of them, some may not have been, but it was a notable theme. But those black people that got up there to support Trump, they represented more of an appeal to a broader demographic than I've ever seen at a Republican convention, including the one 4 years ago from Trump when he was still intent on getting the black vote. Now he's even more that way. So there's going to be a reckoning because black people have a lot to process and deal with in this election. And again, I hate to throw a blanket over all of it, you know, black people, but the black individual, each black individual, let's put it that way, has a lot to reckon with here. They have to reckon with the police violence. They have to reckon with the response to it. They have to reckon with Black Lives Matter, whether they believe that they're truly Marxist at their core, whether they believe that Black Lives Matter as a goal, or a statement of virtue is one thing, but the actual organization is different. I don't think people draw a line between that. Are they aware that the organization has described itself as Marxist? I don't know. But they also have to deal with a palpable assault on their sensibilities for the last 3.5 years, really 5 years, saying that Donald Trump is a racist and a white supremacist. They've been hearing this for 5 years, so they have to process that. But then they have to also process Trump's record. Record low unemployment for black Americans. Criminal justice reform. The support, unprecedented support, permanent support for historically black colleges and universities. These are tangible things that Trump can sell. So his actual record, as opposed to his supposed racism and white supremacy, you put all that together with what's going on in the streets and the response to it, and the hijacking of a legitimate racial justice movement and a legitimate discussion nationally about police reform that everybody was ready for, black and white. Everybody was ready for it. And then the whole movement was hijacked. Hijacked by the insurrectionists, by the criminals, the nihilists who believe in nothing, the anarchists who just want to tear everything down, the Marxists who want 100% tyrannical government control. The movement has been hijacked. And here's, you know, here's the truth of it. That if those who are truly interested in racial justice, the people who would have been responsible participants in a national conversation on police reform, those people must police the insurrectionists. They must speak up against them. They must tell them that they are hurting the cause. They must tell them that they are polluting the message. They're doing more than polluting it. Actually, they're burying it. Because so many people can't see through the haze and the fog of all this urban violence to see the issue of racial justice behind it. And here was the brilliance of Martin Luther King. Yes, what he fought for was virtuous. I think we can pretty much all agree on that, except people that are actual racists. Nonviolent protest. Yes, that was virtuous. We all know that. But here's the thing about the MLK message. It was smart. The methodology was smart. It was based on the simple premise, hear me on this, that if you have a just cause and you assert it with violence, the only thing people will take from it is the violence. That's the headline. Everything else becomes virtual fine print. But if you have a virtuous message and you demand peace, you demand peaceful protest from the people who are on board with it, and you tell them, if you do not commit violence, if you do not attack people and property and break the law, people will listen to your message if it's virtuous. And that's exactly what happened with Martin Luther King. You could not object to the fact that these people were violent. You could not object to the fact that they were breaking the law, other than acts of civil disobedience to, which is really a great American tradition. And when they broke the law, they willingly, well, I'm not going to say willingly, but they subjected themselves to jail for demanding racial justice. The movement succeeded in changing the hearts and minds of Americans because of the justness of the cause, because of the righteousness of the cause, and because it wasn't polluted by violence. Take the Vietnam War. People on the left hated the Vietnam War because we were killing people across the world and trying to stop communism. They just hated the whole idea. That's back when the left was actually anti-war. Not so much anymore. And the right hated the Vietnam War because they believed that Lyndon Baines Johnson was sending us our boys off to war and not giving them a chance to actually win because he was playing a political war. So everybody on both sides hated it. And you know what? An anti-war candidate might have been able to win. Of course, Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. He might have won. But he won espousing peace. He wasn't down with the revolution. The point is that when Richard Nixon was elected, it was largely because of the violence that was the headline of anti-Vietnam protests, riots, looting, and all the other law-breaking and insurrection that was happening back then. That was the headline, and that's all anybody could see, that violence needed to be ended. That was the most important thing. And Nixon was someone who promised that he would end it. Now, that was the story instead of how do we end the Vietnam War? One of those narratives buried the headline, buried the lead, buried the substance. So if those who are interested in true racial justice really want to get their message across, they must come out and speak up against the insurrectionists, so many of whom are white, by the way, so many of whom are white, and basically say, you will not hijack our movement. Because if they don't do it, nobody else will. The Democrats running these cities won't do it. The Democrats at the national level won't do it. Republicans will, but they don't run the cities. So there's really nothing they can do unless Trump wants to basically send in the military, which is against the Constitution. All he can do is offer to help and then send in the National Guard. That's why we have the 10th Amendment. That's why each state is its own individual entity, because the solution for violence in Wyoming, if there was such a thing, would be different than the solution for violence in New York. Different places, different populations, different needs. So each state needs to do it themselves. But if they don't come to the table and at least double, triple, and quadruple down on what Joe Biden finally begrudgingly said this week in condemning the violence in Kenosha, it was almost like it was a hostage video. Like, I am being told what to say. I have been given permission to condemn the violence. When the Democrats had 4 days on the national stage, 12 hours of prime time to talk about it, and they never did. And now Biden comes out. So we'll see, maybe people will believe him and say, well, I think he meant that all along. Or maybe they'll say, wow, that's just cheap political theater trying to get ahead of an issue that you blew at your own convention. I don't know. A lot of people go broke trying to predict the voters. But let's go back to these Trump constituencies. How about women? We talked earlier about those pesky white suburban women who supposedly are just down on Trump so much. They hate his coarseness. They don't like how he tweets. And they think he's all unpleasant and mean and all this stuff. How about them? What was Trump prepared to do to try and get those women back, or at least enough of them to put him over the top again on November 3rd? Well, you know, it's interesting. 4 years ago, Trump said almost everything you could think of. There's almost nothing he didn't say. There were so many things he said that would have taken down any one of which. I mean, he must have said dozens of things that would have taken down any career politician. They would have been dead in the water, but Trump got away with it. But one of the things, of course, that weighs against him is, again, these women and this sense that he's somehow a misogynist, that he's taken advantage of women over the years. He's had 3 marriages. He's had extramarital affairs. And, of course, there was that disgusting video the Access Hollywood video. It was the October surprise unleashed by the Democrats in 2016, all of that together. And Trump undoubtedly has a problem with women. I mean, his voters. He has a problem with women. And 4 years ago, when he was saying everything else, I kept saying to my wife, Lisa, editor-in-chief of LibertyNation.com, coincidentally, how about that? I said to her, how come Trump doesn't magnify the fact that he hired more women into high management positions in his real estate empire than any person had done before? In other words, he elevated, you know, you can say you're for women, you know, you're for, I don't know, equal rights amendment, you're tender, you're soft, you understand women's concerns, all of that. It's one thing to do that. But it's another thing to actually put your money where your mouth is and actually hire women, give women power in your own company. You're putting your own money on the line. You're hiring a woman when you could hire a man. And by all accounts, Trump was way ahead of the curve in hiring women to significant positions in his real estate empire. But he never talked about it. Others did to some extent, but I always fail to understand why he wouldn't try to answer the critics who said he's misogynist, he hates women, he abuses them, all of that stuff. I don't know why he didn't answer by saying, if that was so, how come I hired X number of women in the 1970s when nobody else was hiring women to significant management positions? Never understood why he didn't deliver that message. But on night three of the Republican convention, he sent out a woman who just resigned from his administration, but presumably will continue to support him big time, perhaps in another position. I don't know. But Kellyanne Conway went out there and said what I've thought that Trump should have been saying since 2015.
A woman in a leadership role can still seem novel. Not so for President Trump. For decades, he has elevated women to senior positions in business and in government. He confides in and consults us, respects our opinions, and insists that we are on equal footing with the men.
So that's an obvious appeal to working women and suburban women and the crossover in there. But that's a pretty strong message. Never understood why he didn't use that before, but he's going to try to use it this time. Now, another thing that the Republicans hammered on is something that, you know, we talked about, Scott and I talked about it here on the Uprising on more than one occasion, multiple occasions to be sure, and that is the scandal surrounding Joe Biden's son and how magnificently his coffers were filled following trips by the then Vice President of the United States, his father, Joe Biden. It was a big issue. It was a rising issue. It was something that was coming to the fore. You could feel it bubbling right to the surface. And then the COVID hit. And it was subsumed, that issue was subsumed, like all the others were, by the need to try and control the pandemic. But it's back. It's back now, and it was voiced by Pam Bondi, the Attorney General from the state of Florida.
We all know about Joe's son, Hunter Biden. A corrupt Ukrainian oligarch put Hunter on the board of his gas company, even though he had no experience in Ukraine or in the energy sector. None. Yet he was paid millions to do nothing. He only had one qualification that mattered. He was the son of the man in charge of distributing U.S. aid to Ukraine. Now let's talk about China. Fact. Joe Biden flew to China on Air Force Two with Hunter along for the ride. 10 days later, those Chinese communist bankers approved millions to go to Hunter's firm.
Well, that about says it all, doesn't it? And you can bet that you're going to be hearing that story over and over and over again. I think if the Republican convention revealed anything, it's that there's so many possible lines of attack on Joe Biden that they have to select which ones to use and which ones to bury. For example, the issue of his cognitive decline. I don't think they're going to touch that, and they shouldn't. People need to decide for themselves if they see that. If they see a guy who wants to be president looking and acting senile, they'll pick it up. Trump doesn't need to point it out to them. But this is the kind of thing that Pam Bondage has said that must be pointed out. And so that's not a comprehensive sweep of the Republican convention, but it covers some of the high points. Now, what about the other side? Okay, Joe Biden, basement strategy all week, continuing to sit in the basement and enjoy a white calendar week while Trump was at the convention, an absolute opposite approach from Trump. Because during the Democratic convention, Trump was out appearing in person in battleground states, including being in Scranton, Joe Biden's birthplace. He lived there for, 9 years, I think, 9, 10 years before he moved to Delaware and rose through the ranks. Trump appeared in Scranton the night that Biden made his acceptance speech. He appeared in other battleground states, but Joe Biden has appeared nowhere. Nowhere this week. He did come out of his basement to say that he has been given approval. He's been given approval to condemn the violence, but it sure seemed like that. But Biden did come was interviewed on ABC News. And here's another big dividing line between Trump and Biden. Trump has said under no circumstances will he order a national shutdown again. He did it once. He will never do it again. He will basically attack regional outbreaks. For example, did you know right now the only place last time I looked that the COVID is rising in terms of cases is the upper Midwest, Minnesota, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota? I mean, who knows that? Who knew that? I didn't know that till I looked a couple days ago. But Joe Biden, on the other hand, says, oh, when it comes to a shutdown, well, let's just say his position is a little bit different than Trump's.
I would be prepared to do whatever it takes to save lives, because we cannot get the country moving until we control the virus. That is the fundamental flaw of this administration's thinking to begin with. In order to keep the country running and moving and the economy growing and people employed, you have to fix the virus. You have to deal with the virus.
So if the scientists say shut it down?
I would shut it down. I would listen to the scientists.
So he would shut it down. And the assumption there, of course, is that the economy and everything can't recover if the virus is still spreading. Just how long can you shut down the economy when it reaches the point of no return, where you're looking at a depression instead of a recession, where you're looking at despair so widespread, depression so widespread, options so limited, the dispiriting of the country so great that though some lives will be saved in another shutdown, how many will be lost? How many will be lost to suicide? How many will be lost to people that just drift the rest of their lives because they haven't been able to handle the pressure of this year? I mean, if you've been through anything this year, you understand how difficult this year has been to navigate. But Joe Biden is prepared to do a national shutdown if the Anthony Fauci's of the world tell him, shut it down. Joe Biden will do it right away. That's basically what he's saying. And this is the whole Democratic approach. Shut down at the drop of a hat. Keep the kids out of school. Keep businesses shuttered. Make sure churches are closed, even if gambling parlors are open. That's a point the Republicans made. The point is they want everything shuttered. And it says to me that they sort of want people living in fear of the virus, in fear of going back to work, in fear of going back to school. And there's a reason for fear. But I mean, is the way to give in, is the way to deal with fear to simply give into it and let it control your life? Or is it something that you work through, that you face head on and figure out how to work through it? Isn't that what we've all done this year? We're just making it up as we go, folks. We're making it up as we go. 2020 is like no year we've ever had before. And hopefully, praise God, like none we will ever have again. Now, to the matter of the election itself. This was, I guess in one sense it was predictable. In another sense, it's like a Vietnam flashback to 2016 when you hear Democrats talking about the danger to the vote and their obsession with mail-in voting, mail-in balloting. And that's a whole topic unto itself that we're not going to go into today. But the point is, I think both sides are trying to raise fears that the other will attempt to steal the election. Trump and the Republicans are basically on guard for mail-in balloting, ballot harvesting, where you basically collect ballots and send them all in so that you go to people's doors and you have a ballot in your hand and it's all filled out with Joe Biden checked. All you have to do is sign it or whatever the requirement is in that state. That's the way Democrats want it. Republicans want in-person voting because they don't trust that the Democrats will play it straight up. And the Democrats certainly don't believe that Donald Trump will play it straight up. I'm going to do a back-to-back here. First, Nancy Pelosi. Basically, she said that Trump is acting as an enemy of the state by trying to basically shut down and control and suppress the Postal Service and make sure the mail doesn't get delivered in time. That, I mean, they basically said that he sent out, if not going out himself as president of the United States, a vigilante crews to rip post offices out of the ground and put them on flatbed trucks in the dark of night. That actually sounds like Obama's Iran deal, doesn't it? Remember when they put that, what was it, $1.5 billion in cash on pallets into a plane at like 3 a.m. so nobody could see it. But in any case, the woman who absolutely refused to accept her defeat fair and square in 2016 made, by most counts, about 24 excuses for losing, none of which involved her. And yet she conceded the morning after the election. But she is counseling Joe Biden, don't make the mistake that she made.
We have to have our own teams of people to counter the force of intimidation that the Republicans and Trump are going to put outside polling places. You know, Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstances, because I think this is going to drag out. And eventually, I do believe he will win if we don't give an inch.
Right. If we wait long enough and find enough new votes after Election Day, eventually we'll win. I mean, that's basically what the Democrats did in California. They ballot harvested, which of course now is forcing the Republicans to try to do the same thing. So you've got this corruption of the election system where you've got people out basically push voting. You might call it push balloting. Bringing a ballot to people's door and saying, here's your ballot, just sign it and we'll send it in. There's mail-in balloting, and then there's absentee balloting, which is a long-standing process. If people went through the process of absentee balloting, you could expand it. You expand absentee balloting to make it more widely available and perhaps a bit easier to use. But the point is, nobody's really questioned, other than some, you know, ballots that came in late or were ruled ineligible because if people weren't eligible to vote. Absentee balloting is a long tradition in American history. Go ahead and use it. But this idea of mail-in ballots, where you're just sending ballots to people and they're sending it back, just use common sense. I'm not going to do some sophisticated political analysis, but just use common sense. Do you really think you'd get an accurate result from ballots that are just mailed in haphazardly? I mean, I think the post office may be the least of the problems. But anyway, you know what? It's been a pleasure to spend some time with you today. It's been a long time since you and I have just sat here one-on-one. I know Scott does it a lot. I enjoy being with him. I particularly enjoy working for the sponsor of today's podcast, LibertyNation.com, where truth is making a comeback. And a couple of things. Don't forget the mega aggregator, WhatFinger.com, because that's the place you can go for everything you don't already get at LibertyNation.com. It's reliable, it's on point, and it is everything that the Drudge Report has cracked up to be and maybe used to be, but is not anymore. You're going to get conservative and libertarian viewpoints on WhatFinger.com, unlike anywhere else. So I thank you for enduring this time with me today. It sure has been a pleasure to be with you. Scott will be back next time, and God willing, so will I. Enjoy your weekend, everyone.
Stay ahead of the curve with LibertyNation.com. With one click, you get tomorrow's news today with LNTV's Hot Topics and Analysis, Liberty Nation Radio, The Uprising and Rabbit Hole Podcasts, and dozens of insightful original articles. And now, you can keep your kids ahead of the curve with LNGenZ.com. LNGenZ brings a free-thinking education right into your home for students of every grade level with articles, videos, worksheets, and ready-to-go curriculum. While the media establishment giants are sleeping, you can stay ahead of the curve with LibertyNation.com and get tomorrow's news today. LibertyNation.com.